calling is a recording for Rebecca Chicky with the American Hospital Association of Chicago on Wednesday, January 18, 2017 at 12:30 p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Participation in this call is by express written invitation of the AHA only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect from the call if the AHA denies expressly by your participation. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Rebecca Chicky. Ms. Chicky, you may begin.
Operator, thank you very much, and welcome everyone who is on today's call. This is one in the series of AHA's executive dialogues on behavioral health care. And specifically today, we have the honor of the speaker being Dr. Stuart Boutelier, who is the Regional Director of Inpatient Psychiatry and Continuing Care at Northern Kaiser Permanente in Oakland, California. I must also note that Stuart has, over the years, been a wonderful supporter on our council that represents the American Hospital Association's Section for Psychiatric and Substance Abuse Services. He served for 3 years as a member of the council and then was the chair-elect, the chair, and most recently just rotated off after serving his year as past chair. So, Stuart, thank you for all your energies and insights that you've given to us over the years. But I couldn't let him go free too quickly. So as we were wrapping up 2016, we began to discuss the work that he has been doing with their peer advisory council. And before I get too far into the details, let me formally, for the record, because we are recording the presentation portion of today's call, but not the Q&A, but today's call is entitled The Value of Patient/Peer Advisory Groups, Improving Behavioral Health Services at Northern Kaiser Permanente, Oakland, California. For those of you on the call, please know that at the end of the presentation, we will try to leave around 15 to 20 minutes for Q&A, and the operator at the end of the presentation will give you instructions on how to queue up for those questions. If you'd like to send an email to me with your questions, that is an area that people often do, and my email address is rchicky at AHA.org. Finally, if you still need to download or access the PowerPoint, you can go to www.aha.org/psych, that's P-S-Y-C-H, click on the title of today's conference call, and it will take you to the homepage for this call where you will find the PowerPoint. With that, I encourage you to consider questions. Listen carefully. Stuart and his colleagues have done some very significant work, and I thank him for his willingness to share with us their journey, their experiences, and lessons learned as they have used the peer advisory group to shape and improve the delivery of behavioral health at Kaiser. Stuart, please proceed.
Why, thank you, Rebecca, and I'm delighted and honored to be speaking with you today. I have to ask your forgiveness before I start. We've gone from a drought in California to torrential rains, and I've come down with a cold, so every once in a while you're going to hear me clear my voice, I'm sure. But I'm going to talk today about our Behavioral Health Advisory Council that has been running for a little over 2 years now. And I'd like to acknowledge, before I start, our team that has been involved with this project, Celeste Prothro, Jim Kelleher, Leanne Jones, and Yanair Ballon, who have all worked together over these 2 years to put our council together. What is a member advisor? The Institute for Patient and Family-Centered Care defines it as any role or activity that enables patients and families to have direct input and influence on policies, programs, practices, affecting the care and services for patients and families. Other industries have always looked for ways to understand the consumer's wants and perceptions of their products, but healthcare has really been very slow to adapt and come to the table, and behavioral health has lagged even further behind. I believe that this lack in part from behavioral health comes in part from our historical and clinical perspective in understanding patients, and perhaps believing that patients' perceptions were tainted by psychological distortions and filled with projections. And that way of viewing people has come to be thought of as being quite paternalistic. And we've really moved beyond that now to really recognize the fact that we need to make improvements, and the best way to do that is clearly through feedback. And in fact, there have been many steps and research that's looked at what we call feedback-informed care. Some of you may be familiar with the work of Miller, Duncan, and Lambert. And feedback-informed care has really become a SAMHSA evidence-based practice where you're really bringing the patient to the center of the care and looking for ways in which to engage them, because in the long run, patients' progress is really about them, about themselves and activating them. So I want to make that point for you all. Kaiser, just as a word, is in Northern California, has 4 million members, and we have 33 outpatient and chemical dependency departments. We have embedded specialists in primary care and nearly 2 million visits for mental health and chemical dependency. We have a very extensive continuum of outpatient, inpatient, hospital alternative programs, and as I mentioned, behavioral health specialists in primary care. We're well thought of in terms of the Office of Patient Advocates in California. We're the only four-star group. We're a five-star Medicare program, and we've gotten excellent reviews by both the CMS as well as the Joint Commission. And despite that, we have really thought that we may be missing the boat in terms of getting feedback. And the way in which we started this process is we had some focus groups, got feedback from our purchasers and members who actually have experienced behavioral health services, and certain themes started to come through. Although they had overall very favorable ratings of Kaiser, and there were persistent questions that came up as we heard from these groups. And some of the themes were, you know, how do we access mental health services? We're not really clear how we access the care. How do we determine the right choice of therapist? And how do I come to understand my relationship with the therapist? They wanted to know more information about individual and group psychotherapy. Was one more effective than the other? Why were they being asked to do one or the other? The office environment. We heard from our members that perhaps some of our offices were not the best environment. Maybe some of their confidentiality wasn't being respected sufficiently. The furniture in some of our places was not up to what people had expected. And they also talked about the office hours and locations. They, again, mentioned the compassionate office environment, which we hadn't thought through entirely. And they really wanted to know about the therapeutic team care and care plans and the communication of care plans. So these were all really excellent themes that our members brought to us to think about. And so the mission of our Behavioral Health Council was really to create a context and a forum where behavioral health members and family members of people experiencing behavioral health treatment could serve as advisors to us to, in the long run, improve both our behavioral health services and member safety, and improve behavioral health systems of care, and educate and train, help us educate and train our professionals and staff on members' experiences and perspective. And so I'm now talking about why Behavioral Health Advisory Council, that slide for those of you who are following me on the slide. You know, if we are truly patient-focused and really want to be national leaders at Kaiser in providing safe and effective care, then we really need to bring the important and perspectives about the experience of care that patients have. We need to learn from them how our system really works. It's one thing to view it from the point of view of a practitioner. It's another, and as a manager, it's another to really learn how the patient's experience going through your system. We also felt that by bringing in patients who've experienced our system to an advisory council, we would be actually broadening our connections to the community. And it often offered them an opportunity to give back to their communities and to give back for others, because one of the things you find out in these advisory councils is that people really feel empowered and then can take that back to their community. And it also would demonstrate our own commitment to patient involvement and learning from our patients. So we believe that the council, by bringing together this diverse group of people and families to discuss important issues, that we will be able to identify and advise regional and medical center leaders about their issues, and we'd be able to partner for addressing these types of issues and move them forward, and provide input actually into the services that members would like to see offered and actively participate in the design of these services. So what are the responsibilities and duties of people on our advisory board? Well, we really want them to feel comfortable representing their perspective and the perspective of other members as well as family members. And we really are very empowering them to share their issues without fear of ridicule or criticism in order to create a safe environment. We expect them to adhere to group norms. We have never asked anybody to leave, but if somebody were not to adhere to the group norms, that we might actually have to ask them to leave the council. Again, that has not happened at all. So what are those group norms? Openness, confidentiality, really, unless stated, that information won't leave the room. That has been a very critical underlying thing that our patients were concerned about. Listening without criticizing, understanding that there's no bad questions, giving people permission to think outside of the box. There's no wrong ideas either. We expect people to arrive on time and to finish on time. They have the right not to say anything. They have the right to pass and just listen not contribute if an issue is too powerful for them to speak to, or just in the moment they have nothing to express. And they need to be able to communicate with us about meetings and business. Let us know when they're not going to be coming, for example. I can tell you one person who did not do that. I just worried throughout the meeting about them. So how do we recruit members? And this is an important thing to think about. How do you really get people who can contribute? And the patient advisors actually will be Kaiser members or members in your organization or family members, and who have actually sought and experienced behavioral health at Kaiser. They are recruited in accordance with our legal and confidentiality requirements. And once identified, the advisors are asked to complete an application and an interview process, which I will be describing. Those that are selected will be invited to participate as members of the council following completion of onboarding. And we have a whole onboarding process for volunteers. And essentially, the the patient advisors are really considered as volunteers in terms of our overall policy, which means confidentiality, getting health screening, and other orientation processes that all of our volunteers go through, including background checks. Membership. The membership consists of, again, Kaiser members and their family advisors, and with the goal of having a maximum of 10 to 12 active members. The staff has never come close to exceeding the number of advisors, but we really wanted to make sure that as part of our setting the status of this, that it was clear that we did not want to have members feel uncomfortable by being overrun by our Kaiser staff. And actually, right now, there are three Kaiser staff who participate, one who manages the logistics in the meetings, and then two co-chairs. The advisors, really, we looked at the diversity of our Kaiser membership in terms of their diversity and race, in terms of their sexual orientation, in terms of other experiences that they've had in terms of where they are in the region, which medical centers that they're attached to. So we really look for a diverse group of people who could give us the broadest opinions about their experience. Again, people couldn't be excused from meetings, but we really need to hear from them, and our expectation is that they participate in at least three-fourths of the meetings in a calendar year to maintain their membership. Again, with permission, and this is not really something we really emphasize, is that people can attend by phone. We find really that the people who are on the phone are much more passive and less active, and we much more prefer to have them be in attendance. We hold the meetings in Oakland, though Kaiser, actually, for those of you familiar with Northern California, our Kaiser facilities are from really the Sierra foothills to Gilroy and Fresno, and then on the coast from Santa Rosa and Santa Cruz. We tend to draw, in terms of this initial advisory council, from areas around Oakland so that people will not have to travel so far. And the Bay Area is becoming like other places. The traffic is sometimes terrible, so we want to make sure that that people can travel to the meetings. The council, in terms of membership terms, the council term is set at 2 years. The members can be extended, and that depends on, in part, their contribution to the group, as well as our situation with the number of members on the council. I'll talk some about the challenges later, but it's not necessarily easy to get council members, so we want to make sure that we have an ongoing group as much as possible. So things to discuss with the group. Decision-making, which becomes an important issue. We make decisions as a council by consensus, and we define it clearly as a decision everyone can live with, even if it is not your first choice. Consensus will be achieved with at least one co-chair present to make decisions and to give input. Again, confidentiality. I have to underline confidentiality because maintaining appropriate and confidential handling of personal information is important to everyone in the council. We encourage people to only use first names of people who are not in the room or not on the council. And we do set annual priorities and goals that have to be approved by the council. And we provide that information to our health plan executives and our medical group executives, who are the sponsors of our group. The participant selections, there's a process, and I think it's an important process that we go through to attract members. And we've been very successful at attracting appropriate members by using this selection process. Typically what happens is the person is nominated by the medical center and typically the Department of Psychiatry or Chemical Dependency, and they list the areas where care has been delivered, what medical center, and they tell us whether or not the person actually has been notified of their nomination. Some therapists feel that that they don't want to tell the person up front. They want to just notify us about it and have us review the information before letting the people know that they've been nominated. We do ask that the person be free of substance abuse for at least 1 year, and 2 years post-acute psychiatric hospitalization. And we do ask whether or not the person is still in treatment. We prefer to have people who are still in treatment or have been recently in treatment as well, so they're sort of up to date on what's happening in the clinic and their own experience. We ask whether or not somebody has been seen in a group setting and whether or not the person is an effective communicator. We also ask questions related to suitability. We want to know in what context the therapist or manager has worked with the candidate. Has it been in a psychotherapy session? Has it been in a group setting? Or has it been in some other way that they've participated in knowing the patient? In one instance, we had a person who we interviewed who'd actually had a meeting with our Kaiser leadership to talk about their experience, and although it hadn't been for treatment in several months, they were clearly people who had something to say about our system, and we really needed to include them in that. So they were not nominated by their therapist, but in fact a Kaiser leader. And we always ask the question, why do you think this candidate should be considered as an advisor? What are they bringing to the table that you think would really benefit our system, as well as the person? And we really, again, focus on diversity of our membership and whether or not and how this particular member or candidate would contribute to the diversity of the council. We ask for the nominator's name and contact information, and we let them know that we will be disclosing that to the patient that they've the advisor that they've nominated them. Once nominated, we review the information, and the next step, of course, is to move on to some sort of screening and interviewing process. And our initial interview process is by phone screening. One of the three of us will make a call to the patient. We'll introduce ourselves and tell the person that the call is not related to any current test or medical issues with which he or she may be dealing with, and that we let them know who referred the person to us. And if the nominee asks, we let him or her know from whom the referral was received. We let the person know that nothing they say during the call will go into his or her medical record, because that is a concern that nearly everybody has brought up, is how will this information be used about me. And so we assure them that this is confidential and that none of the information goes into their medical record. We advise the people up front that they may or may not be selected to the council. I had one person who'd been nominated who just could, you know, we asked a few questions, and she couldn't pull it together sufficiently to give a coherent answer to any of the questions, and she continued to talk in very pressured ways. And later I discovered that actually she'd had was in the middle of a bipolar manic episode. So the screening is very important to be able to get a sense of the person's stability as well as their ability to really voice their opinion in a way in which that'll be helpful. We again focus again on advisory council. Some people have wanted to join the council to make a broader impact on Kaiser, be on a different sort of council. So we've really focused, let them know that, no, really what you're doing is you're joining a behavioral health regional member advisory council to lead behavioral health. So, you know, important characteristics to consider is they're really able to use their personal experience constructively. Some of our members have talked to us about the suffering that they went through when their child had cancer. And we had one participant whose husband ended up having a suicide gesture because of what they were going through around their child's cancer treatment. The importance of the primary care folks being able to identify and refer them for further treatment and behavioral health. We had a member who could talk eloquently about her PTSD and how we may or may not have served her appropriately. We had a member who talked about their child's autism and how successful the treatment had been and how they'd been engaged in our system and were so appreciative of the autism being able to be detected early on and supporting the family. So you get the entire range of people's experience with your system that's so enabling to them as they talk about their personal experience as well as to some of their insights and information in the ways in which others can learn from them about what they've experienced. It's important that other characteristics are really seeing beyond their personal experiences, being able to step back and say and see a larger systems issue, not just their own perception, and being able to take in the fact that, hey, maybe I had a miserable experience, but another council member had a terrific experience, and not to minimize both of those experiences. Willingness, again, to share. Being a good listener is important because we really want have everyone be able to speak their minds without being shut down. An ability to be thoughtful about their experience, again, and thoughtful in the sense, too, of we bring things up that we want the members to think about when they're not with us and to come back and give us feedback so that they can go away and have either read some material or talk with a person who we've suggested that they speak with, and then bring back information to the council. It's important to respect our Kaiser staff and physicians. That's been never come up as a big issue, but that is something if we're learning that somebody is not being respectful and not working with staff well, that would be an issue that we probably need to talk with them about. And again, understanding the purpose and the goal of the council, we make sure that in terms of our work with them, that they are understanding what we're about, what we're interested in, and how we're directing them. In terms of our interview, also we have some very clear questions that we ask and an interview process that all three of us and others are use. We start out the warm-up with warm-up questions, including tell us something about yourself, what community activity experience do you have, what did you enjoy about your experience in community activity, why were you involved, and we ask them to share an experience with us that they'd had at Kaiser. And all of these give us a good sense of somebody's perspective on their experience, their ability to be in a group setting, and their interest in really helping other people by being involved in a community activity. We describe the advisory council and discuss the expectations, which I mentioned earlier, and emphasize that this is not group therapy. It's important that people know that they're coming again to contribute, that their therapy is going on in their clinics or in their chemical dependency programs, and not this isn't a group therapy. That's not to say that people don't bring up difficult issues and want to talk about it, but there's not an expectation that we're going to meet individually with them between sessions, or that that we're going to resolve psychological issues within the advisory council. More interview type questions. We ask them about their experiences with behavioral health. We want to make sure that they've had and been seen in behavioral health. We had someone who was nominated who hadn't been seen for 10 years, and we felt that at that point that probably wasn't a person who could give us most information about our system and its current configuration. And we asked them to, in terms of our interview, to go into some depth about what their experience was like. And we hear the good, the bad, and the ugly about what they've experienced from treatment, and we ask them to really kind of address what would have been made it better for them. What was missing and what would have made it better are two questions we always want to get to. And people, even who've had wonderful treatment experiences and have come out the other side feeling very good about themselves and the care that they've gotten, always have something to share to us about how we could make their experience better, from the environment to the location, to the idea of being able to select their therapist. All of those things we've learned quite a bit more about. We specifically asked them why would they be interested in serving on the council, having heard all these obligations. And we asked them what experience would they like to have in terms of working in groups to solve issues, what experience have they had in solving issues previously. And, again, we believe that the council really should reflect the cultural diversity of families who are consumers of health care services and behavioral health services. We asked them to share anything about themselves that they think would add diversity to the council in terms of their own experiences and their background. We're very focused also on their ability to commit to a monthly meeting, if they live a little further away, what plans would they have to make transportation to make it to our meetings. And to also subgroup involvement after the meetings, because we do ask the members to serve on other types of boards if necessary, or do some outreach as well to other communities and serve as a spokesperson for Kaiser about treatment or anti-stigma for behavioral health. So we do ask their ability to not only to attend the meetings on a monthly basis, but do they have time to really be involved and engaged in this endeavor? In terms of their vision, we ask, what would you like to see happen on a council that provides input into behavioral health services? And we advise them that we'll be getting back to them and making sure that when they've had a chance to think about it, and we've had a chance to think about it, that we think it's a good fit, and we describe the next steps. It's important to let people know that that financially that you will pay for their travel. Some of our participants don't have much money, and we certainly don't want that to be a burden. So we pay mileage and make sure that, and I'll comment on a little bit later, but we provide dinner as well for our meetings so people can travel comfortably and get there and enjoy a meal with us. So what new advisors might be thinking of, what we've learned from them afterwards and going back to them is, will my relationships or healthcare change if others know I'm on the advisory council? They really want to know, are we going to be talking to other people about them, their therapists or others? Will they get more or less healthcare having been in the council? And so we want to assure them that nothing's going to change in terms of their outside relationships and treatment that they're getting. They all really want to know that whether or not their input is going to be taken seriously, and be honest that we really respect their experience, and we will make sure that this is not just about making the organization look good. That has been a concern that has come up, that they don't really feel that they want to be necessarily a prize of the system and only talk about the good things and go out publicly and just talk about their good experiences. We really want them to be as honest as possible about what they've experienced in our system in order for us to really make a difference. And along with that, we want to make sure that we continue to tell them what affects their communication, their decisions have made on our system. What actions did we take based on what they've told us? It's very important for the advisory council to know that they've been effective in creating some changes or improvements in the system, or very quickly they get discouraged and feel that it's a waste of their time. So I can really strongly suggest it strongly enough that you continue to remind people about what you've done with the information that they've given you, and what changes have been made because of it. The meeting format, we meet for 2 hours, typically from 5 until 7. The first 30 minutes is food and small talk. It feels much like a social gathering of people who have just come together to enjoy each other. Talk about during that time movies that people saw that were interesting. People may talk about their kids' soccer game and how well they did. It really is a chance for us to socially engage and get out of our roles, as particularly for the leaders, to get out of the roles of being leaders, but being people who are present just to be there and socialize. They need to have badges to get into our facility, which is what we do when we onboard them. We will have to make sure that their parking is taken care of for the meeting, and that they hand in their forms to get travel reimbursements. We really want to make sure that that's taken care of. We always go back to tips for being an effective advisor, reminding them to be a good listener, be empathetic, keep their minds open, not interrupting others. We encourage them to wear two hats. One is a consumer of services and what their experiences are, because many of them are still in treatment, and also a patient advisor. Again, we tell them that it's important to be honest, to be available to others as they talk about things, and to take responsibility for learning, which goes back to, between sessions and meetings, reading about information that we've sent them or decisions that we'd like them or documents we'd like them to review before the meetings. So I want to talk about some of the things that have been accomplished during our 2 years. We have implemented outcome-informed care and have a particular document that we use called Adult Outcomes Questionnaire, or the AOQ, which is our way of measuring distress and improvement in treatment. And we presented this document to our advisors for input on, again, how to use the outcome tool. And we learned quite a bit about not just the document, which is an evidence-based document, but about how it was being delivered. Our group presents these documents, and it's again one that the patient fills out every session. And so we ask them, what about your experience of your therapist reading what you've documented has been important to you? And we've learned a number of things about how the therapist can communicate the outcomes of the document. And we've been able to give feedback to our therapist about how to address outcomes. We have a welcome to behavioral health document for patients who are arriving for their appointment. Our advisors reviewed the document, improved it, made sure that it was in a language that that they could understand, and it went through multiple iterations before they were satisfied. They gave us quite a bit of information and experience about their having been in emergency departments and what that was like for somebody who has behavioral health issues. I took that opportunity to address the chief of psychiatry and as well as the emergency department, the chiefs of the emergency departments, about the feedback that we'd gotten from them about the ways in which to engage and welcome people with behavioral health problems and the sensitivity to issues that people who are in the emergency room with behavioral health conditions experience. We have a behavioral health call center. I had the manager of the call center talk to them about what the call center does, how it operates, and several of them had interactions with the call center and were able to give feedback about the processes and how to improve it. Appointment viewing. All throughout our organization, people, one of the exciting things about being a member is that you can view your appointments and make appointments online. And that has not been true for behavioral health clients. And so we talked about how important it was and whether or not they felt comfortable having their appointments viewed at behavioral health on our website for them, which again is very confidential as well. But we wanted to run that by them, and how to hook in our medical advice line, which is also another avenue that people can check on their appointment viewing and make changes. Therapist profiles. This goes back to selecting therapists. They wanted to know, can I view my therapist background? Can I understand what kind of interests they have as therapists? What kinds of experiences that they have? So I could help me understand whether or not they may be a good fit for me. So we've actually used the information they've given us about what was important for a person to know about their therapist and their background, and now including that in the profiles that each of our therapists are creating. We do that for all of medicine, but they had specific interests in terms of behavioral health. What's the person's theoretical orientation? How do they feel about religion? They would ask questions like that. Some of that is included in our profiles now. We have done quite a bit of remodeling of our facilities and programs, and they gave us input on the hours and of services and locations and what the therapist's office space should look like as we not only remodel, but we build new buildings. We had our facility planning people come in and present what a psychotherapy office should look like, what a group room should look like, what kind of furniture, what colors they experienced as being positive. We also talked to them about hiring and recruitment strategies. And we've been really looking to include more, have more and more therapists join Kaiser. And we asked, what kind of things would you want us to look at in terms of recruiting people? Where would you want us to look? We also talked to them about peer-level education, community organizing, and whether or not what organizations they feel that they're engaged, that they themselves are engaged with, that we could outreach to. The National Alliance of the Mentally Ill, we have a member that's on the National Alliance of the Mentally Ill. We actually did a presentation for the NAMI organization. We had NAMI come and speak with us, and they've also had us looking at other types of organizations as well. We've talked to them and had quite a bit of effort related to stigma, and we've done quite a bit of work within Kaiser and also at a national level in anti-stigma campaigns and having panels of members coming up and talking about their experience of being stigmatized for their mental health conditions. And our members have served on those boards. Intimate partner violence program, we've gotten feedback on identifying of patients with IPV and how to display information for patients to get help, what would be the best way to do that in a way that would be encouraging people to get help rather than scaring them away. We've been moving much more towards telepsychiatry, and we wanted to know what their thinking was about that and what were the best way to do outreach with telepsychiatry for them. Did they really feel that video conferencing and phone calls were sufficient? Or how much individual face-to-face time do they need as opposed to over the phone or video? So we've gotten their feedback about that as well. We have also discussed with them care and treatment planning, which has become a very big part of our feedback-informed care and patient empowerment, that patients are agreeing on their care plan. And we ran by them a tool that we've developed for treatment planning to get their input into that. Again, this idea of having the person be the center of the treatment planning rather than having a treatment plan imposed on them. And they really helped us with the form that we did. In terms of agenda and topics, we have invited senior regional leaders at Kaiser to do presentations to them, our mental health director, our associate executive director, leaders in our health plan who've come and talked to them about what the aims are of Kaiser, what kinds of large programs that are they're evolving into. We've, again, showed them the outcomes questionnaire. We ran by them the group psychotherapy description, which goes back to an earlier concern that people had about why do I get individual, why do I get group, what's the benefit of group, what's the benefit of individual psychotherapy, and how do you make your decisions about that? And so we've helped use their input to get formats for group psychotherapy and describe what the advantages are and what the member should be looking for. Again, facility planning. Our regional leader around facility planning came in to talk about what our projects, the future should look like, what facilities are going to be remodeled. We got their input about the location of mental health outpatient within our medical center. Do they want it separate? Do they want it? They want it closer to other services in the medical center. What were their opinion about having chemical dependency services near our child clinics? So we've really gathered as much information as we can from them about their input into locations. Again, the call center, and we've run by them new programs. We have a new program called CBT for psychosis groups that which is an evidence-based practice in mental health. We ran the program by them and thought it's a 13-module week program. We ran that by them to see whether or not they thought that would be beneficial. And again, we've reviewed confidentiality, our forms for confidentiality with them. And again, they've represented us at conferences and panels, including statewide events for NAMI and other organizations. So I want to mention some of the challenges. So again, travel and distance is an issue. Particularly the Bay Area is getting very difficult to get around very easily. The meetings do start at 5. So we want to make sure that we understand people's ability to get to the meetings. Some other challenges have to do with life changes, childbirth, marriages, divorces, all of those kinds of things that all of us go through. This clearly affects our membership and people coming and going. They get burned out, and it's a challenge to recruit new members. We have never gotten to 10 to 12 members. We stayed between 6 and 7, which is not a bad number, but we would much rather have a slightly larger group. And I'm constantly having to remind our medical centers and our psychiatry departments to send me nominations. At every chief's meeting that I go to, as a chief, I remind people that that we really want new members. It's not necessarily easy for people to patients to volunteer, particularly ones that are still currently getting treatment. So that's important. Decompensation. People may have conditions that worsen during the course of their time on the council, and you have to be mindful of that and sensitive to what they may be going through and may need to take some time off the council as they're resolving their issues and getting back. It is important that we not be seen as therapists. One member in particular called me from the emergency department as they were going to the emergency department to be hospitalized and asking me to help out. I was happy to help, but I was very clear with the person that they needed to be dealing with the psychotherapist that was seeing them in the emergency department, and I would certainly be helpful to them in any way I could, but really that I was not their therapist. Those have been the primary issues that have come up for us. Keeping members fresh with perspective and getting that feedback and new members coming and joining is a very important thing if that can be managed. And with that, I think I'm going to stop here and
thank you so much, Stuart. Thank you very much, not only for your time today and your willingness to share your experiences and your insights and lessons learned, but for all the work that came before today's conference call, for your leadership, and you're willing to, as they say, be on the bleeding edge of things. You are right. This is a new area for behavioral health providers to tiptoe into. And so thank you for being inspirational. And if anyone on the line would like to get in touch with Stuart or thinks of a question for him afterwards, please don't hesitate. I'd be happy to compile them and share them with him. Again, my email address is rchickey@aha.org. And I think, Stuart, any last words before we conclude today's call?
No, thank you, and I'd be very interested as you all start up your own programs and processes. Please keep in touch with me and let me know how things are going.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and everyone have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.